There are two more topics, if possible, I'd like to hear views on, if I may. One of them is, we've heard about, as it were, narrative, and we've also, of course, heard, because it's the world we're in, about the fact that there is no single narrative, there are multiple narratives, and, of course, some of those multiple narratives are to do with diversity and ethnicity. And those have implications for the Britain we're in now, which was not true when people were constructing syllabuses even 30 or 40 years ago. There are two people, I think, with questions about that, and perhaps we could take them both together. Maggie Wilson and John Siblon. Are they here? John, is Maggie? Yeah, good. Can we hear from you both and then see what we can do with this one? Go ahead.
Okay, I'll just get straight to the question. The question is should the long history of peoples of African origin and descent and people from the Indian subcontinent in Britain be an integral part of British history taught in schools? And if you agree with that, how do you envisage that coming about being taught in everyday practice in schools?
Thank you very much. And Maggie, I think your question is along the same lines.
Yes, I'm Maggie Wilson, and I used, and until very recently, taught in a school in South Bradford that was in challenging circumstances. And to some extent, what my concerns were have been addressed, because I'm concerned about lower ability children as well as ethnic diversity. But obviously in Bradford, the ethnic diversity was terribly important. And although at Key Stage 3, I could make the curriculum as relevant as I possibly could to some of my students, I am concerned that if there's a review, I might lose that opportunity, that it might be so narrowed down that that chance of being creative with the curriculum mm-hmm. will go.
Okay. Chris?
Two different sorts of points on that, if I may. There's an incredibly good article in this week's London Review of Books by a historian related about the accident of marriage to the gentleman on my left, by Linda Colley, on the nature of English and British history, where she talks very much about fluidity of boundaries and the notion that British history now probably means something different from British history 20 or 30 years ago. And it's a reminder that the identities that we're dealing with are fluid. And being a teacher, I'm going to set you as your follow-up reading Linda Colley's article in this week's London Review of Books.
It is very good.
There is a slightly more fundamental point, I think, which is that we teach in a highly culturally diverse society, and we have an obligation to all of our children, wherever they happen to be, that they have an understanding of the society in which they are growing up into, and the way in which it has evolved. We have to make a prior decision, because there's simply too much history to teach. So a decision to teach some things means a decision not to teach something else. And we can have a sort of X factor-like competition at this point and decide whether George III really makes the cut.
I'm
looking forward to it. I suspect he doesn't. But the serious point is this. Fundamentally, the content of the history curriculum is there because of the job it does in relation to the purposes of the curriculum. So you can't have your X factor-like competition until you've had the prior debate about the job the curriculum is doing in relation to the curriculum as a whole, in relation to other subjects, in relation to children's lives. Now, I'm absolutely sure that in a culturally diverse society, we have an obligation to reflect that in our teaching, in our content, in our methods. But I'm also prepared to accept that the reality is that even if we get the topside 214 hours that Steve gets, we're going to have to make some pretty tough choices. Let's be clear about why we're making those choices in relation to what it is we're trying to achieve, and also accept that it won't necessarily be the same everywhere.
But not George III, I think.
I think it's a question that wouldn't be asked in America, for example, because America takes its huddle masses and turns them into Americans over a period of years. It's more difficult in this country. We have not only large ethnic African and Asians from the subcontinent, there are also very large communities of Polish people living in London, Portuguese people in London, and now Lithuanians and Latvians, quite large communities. And, you know, do we relate to those as well? And I think that all these immigrant groups have come to this country because they like our way of life, they like our way of doing things, they like our freedoms and our liberties, they like our tolerance. And I think those stories have to be got over. So I would emphasize, as were the Britishness. Obviously, at times, Britain has impacted with all of these countries, particularly in India and in Africa, and in some cases, not at all in a nice way. And that has to be faced, actually, in the teaching. There's no question about that. But on the whole, I would still emphasize, but you're much closer to this. You've probably got classes with large ethnic minorities in them. But I still believe that the history of those of their civilizations, some of which are older than our civilization and more cultured than our civilization, and in the past have been more civilized than our civilization, I think should be taught not in the general run of education, but in the schools that they have on the Saturdays. They must not lose their ties to the cultural background which their families have come. I'm quite sure about that. But I think in the general run of schools, I would emphasize, as it were, the fact that they are now members of a new country which they like to be in.
A person over there, I think, wanted to come in on this.
Thank you. I'm Richard Harris. I'm chair of the HA Secondary Committee. I'd just like to take issue partly with what goes on in America, because the situation there isn't as straightforward as Lord Baker makes it out. There's a lot of problems in terms of the history they teach. But I also think in terms of the issues being raised, I think there's a useful distinction, because these debates have been happening elsewhere around the world, a distinction between what you might call British history and the history of Britain. And actually, British history and the history of Britain can be quite different things, and one's actually a much more inclusive curriculum, and I think that's one of the things we need to think our way around. But I also want to come back to an earlier point about the frameworks, in that I think we do actually have a good framework. It's called the National Curriculum. Okay, and what we've got at Key Stage 3, from everybody I've worked with and people, the teachers I've worked with, are very positive about it, because it provides them with that sort of flexibility. The problem is not the framework or the curriculum, it's the things outside of that which are impacting on that, and it's the difficulty schools have, particularly things like time. A lot of the stuff Kath and I have been finding out from the HA survey is that the huge variation in time between in the schools is massive. Okay, and it's, in a sense, how do we reconcile those sorts of issues? The framework's there, that's working, but it's the other things which are impacting on it which seem to be the problem.
Thank you. And then the two ladies here, then we'll...
It strikes me we are now living in a global society, and one very important thing, we've sort of talked about the anxieties of this, is that every child, no matter what their background, sort of can appreciate that the whole world has a history. I'd be very worried if we moved too much of an Anglo-centric approach that saw the world only through the eyes of this country, or indeed only through the eyes of the West. It seems to me that there's got to be some way of showing all these great civilizations. I mean, Egypt gets in, I imagine. Greece and Rome get in. It doesn't seem to need all that much to cover China, India, in fact, you know, the whole of the world, at least in summary terms, so that everybody can see that their area has a history, because I think otherwise we're sort of excluding this. We're getting to the Aborigine problem, which the Australians have had great difficulties with. We mustn't get into that. Now, I know that's a huge challenge, but in a way, it can be communicated by pointing out, perhaps at primary level, that every part of the world has a history to it. They're not going to be able to study it all in the same level of detail, but nonetheless, it's got to be reinforced that that is the case.
And I just wanted to say very quickly, I agree entirely with what you said, but the thing that concerned me about what Sir Ken had just said was that if you just marginalise ethnic history, where it's very strongly linked to British history in terms of the Empire and Commonwealth, and suggest that it only needs to be taught to those children who will gain self-esteem from it, then you're assuming it's irrelevant to people who are not from that ethnic background, and that promotes the divide.
Yes.
Thank you. You did ask a question just earlier, which I think links, about other types of qualification. I'm Julia Neal. I teach history in Devon, but I've also done some work as part of my role as a National Officer of the Association of Teachers and Lecturers on rethinking the curriculum And I think we're in a straitjacket of the pressures down from assessment and having to fit in too many different subjects. And I would come back to the earlier point that we do need to teach skills because there are opportunities, for example, in the Aquavac that we do in our school, where students can pick up extended projects later on. I've seen students who have had to give up history because they couldn't fit everything in, but have come back because they have got the skills to pursue all sorts of diverse subjects. So you don't necessarily have to go down the traditional road that we've been going for so long. We can experiment with the curriculum and give students more freedom. And one of the things that I spoke to a student just recently, I said, you've got a lot of work to do on this extended project over the summer holidays. How are you going to cope with that? You've just done AS. She said, no, but it's my topic. I've got ownership of it. And I'm going to love doing it.
Thank you. For